Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
A state plan that requires leaving unimpaired flows of 30 to 50% in each of the San Joaquin River tributaries can move forward, according to a court ruling. More than a dozen lawsuits, including one filed by the California Farm Bureau, challenge different aspects of the state's first phase of the Water Quality Control Plan update. Water districts, farmers, and residents in a region protested the plan, saying it would do little to restore salmon and other fish populations while cutting water supplies to the northern San Joaquin Valley. The state's water chief has emphasized the need to better manage flood flows and groundwater during wet periods to improve water supply reliability during dry periods. During the California Farm Bureau Capital Ag Conference in Sacramento recently, California Department of Water Resources Director Carla Nemeth highlighted work underway and outlined long-term plans to help the state adapt more broadly. She also acknowledged that investments in water infrastructure, which farmers have urged for years, have been slow coming. Farmers and ranchers gathered at the state capitol in Sacramento recently to advocate on policies impacting agriculture, from groundwater management to wildfires to technology. As they met with lawmakers and staff during the annual Capital Ag Conference, which marks the start of the legislative year, the delegation of California Farm Bureau members focused particular energy on trying to rescue programs that provide financial compensation to ranchers whose livestock are impacted by wolves. Amid the state budget deficit, money ran out for the pilot program. In early 2023, Grub Market announced its groundbreaking Sustainable California Initiative, which aims to bolster agricultural sustainability and promote stronger food systems throughout California by engaging in meaningful endeavors like planting trees and supporting local farmers to obtain organic certification. Today, Grub Market proudly reflects on the significant strides it has made over the past year towards achieving these goals and the positive impact it has made on local communities and the environment, according to the company. Throughout the past 12 months, Grub Market has been working alongside the global restoration nonprofit called One Tree Planted. A core achievement of the Sustainable California Initiative has been the successful planting of over 100,000 trees, primarily across Northern California, including drought-stricken areas that have been ravaged by wildfires and deforestation. This extensive reforestation effort not only helps to preserve key watersheds and agricultural ecosystems, but enhances biodiversity, fights the impacts of climate change, and sequesters carbon dioxide, according to Grubhub. As part of this tree planting project, dozens of different tree species have been planted, hundreds of hectares of land have been reforested, and thousands of wildlife species have benefited. Once fully mature, these trees are expected to sequester nearly 500,000 pounds of CO2 per year. In addition to tree planting, Grub Market has been collaborating with California Certified Organic Farmers as part of its Sustainable California Initiative to support farmers making a transition to organic agriculture practices. Through the Organic Transition Program, Grub Market and CCOF have committed to providing grants, mentorship, and technical assistance over three-year periods to underserved farmers in California who want to make the challenging leap to organic production. In 2023, the program kicked off with a strong group of 10 farmers representing 10 different counties throughout the state and farming a variety of mixed vegetables, berries, grapes, livestock, and poultry. In total, these 10 farmers farm hundreds of acres of farmland and represent over four different ethnicities and speak multiple languages. By fostering inclusiveness and opportunity within a farming community, Grubhub feels that they are helping to address systemic inequities while promoting the adoption of organic farming practices. It's a bountiful spring of blueberries for California giant berry farms as the company forecasts significant volumes of domestic blueberries. The growers' high yields and exceptional quality continue as consumer demand persists. They're forecasting a strong harvest of domestic conventional and organic blueberries in the immediate months from several growing regions, including California, Florida, Georgia, and North Carolina. This will be followed by a large blueberry crop coming from the Pacific Northwest growing regions in early June, according to Thomas Smith, director of sales. Conventionally grown Florida blueberries have just begun harvesting, and California Giant expects peak volumes by mid to late April. Georgia production is forecasted to start in early April and will hit peak production in early May. Concurrently, the North Carolina growing region will add to volumes that bolster the Southeast season. Promotable volumes from the opposite side of the states, California's Central Valley, will provide ample supplies of fresh blueberries from mid-May through mid to late June. California's giant Oxnard, California organic blueberry crop has been harvesting since early 2024 and will hit peak production volume by early April before a steady decline in May. The Central Valley organic blueberry crop will begin peak production in late April, with production continuing through May. They're on the right track to have a very good supply of high-quality blueberries throughout the domestic season, according to Smith. Through the shared industry goal to drive significant increases in blueberry consumption, California Giant continues to provide a year-round supply of sustainably grown fresh berries, according to the company. Clover Sonoma, a trailblazer in sustainable and regenerative farming and a leading producer of high-quality dairy, has announced its newly refreshed line of organic lactose-free milk in whole and 2% fat in three different flavors, which include chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. Pasture-raised from local American Humane Certified organic farms, these milks are available throughout California at natural grocers, including Whole Foods Market and Sprouts, in addition to other local independent retailers. According to Circana data, over the past year, the value-added dairy category grew 4.3% on a strength of lactose-free, which rose over 10.3%. They aim to offer the tastiest, most nutritious value to consumers within a highly competitive dairy category, according to Clover Sonoma Vice President of Marketing and Innovation, Susan Shields. She says research shows a demand for value-added milk across the organic, lactose-free, and flavor categories. With this lineup, they deliver on all these requests and more. Those looking for lactose-free options can still benefit from the nutritional benefits that milk has to offer, like protein, calcium, and vitamins A and D, while the flavored milks also offer a delicious option with low or no added sugars.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456. It's been a while since we've put out a regulatory update for walnuts on the show, and California Walnut Boarding Commission's Josh Ram, Director of Technical and Regulatory Affairs, is back with the latest. Top of the list is the EPA's Endangered Species Act. There's a couple initiatives underway as a result of a lawsuit settlement, one of these being the Vulnerable Species Pilot, which will impact producers in California, including in some walnut-growing areas.
The EPA has actually identified 27 federally threatened and endangered species that are vulnerable to pesticides, proposed mitigation to protect them by minimizing or avoiding pesticide exposure, and described really an approach to implement the mitigation in certain future pesticide decisions. Of note for walnuts, so there are a couple items are of the 27 endangered species with palmette, brocted birdsbeak, and the Buena Vista ornate lake shrew. So looking at a few of those, farmers, producers, retailers, co-ops, and other engaged stakeholders have started to vocalize concern over the practical impact in this vulnerable species pilot and what that will have on pesticide users and the community. Many of the mitigation and compliance options offered by the proposal at times are very much unworkable and unrealistic in cases for a wide range of agricultural producers, not to mention the costs from an implementation standpoint. So as proposed, this VSP, or Vulnerable Species Pilot, among other strategies that I mentioned, would really set a disturbing precedent by suggesting pesticide users should be subject to broad and significant upfront restrictions on the vast majority of pesticide products without taking any steps to even consider whether a risk to species, environment, and/or habitats might occur. As a result of some of these concerns, many agricultural operations, businesses, other pesticide users, and conservation efforts are likely to be made more challenging. We continue to work with our offices at the federal level in DC, additional ag groups and governmental agencies to work towards optimal outcomes for the industry. The importance of this item and everything else coming behind it, that continued engagement is extremely important with legislators, regulators, the governmental agencies, those ag coalitions and groups and much more. It's going to be really important to aid in further favorable revisions to the strategies and most importantly, revisions that are practical and feasible for our growers and ag industry as a whole. A couple things since some of those original efforts and early efforts, the advocacy of those, the EPA in response expects to make some revisions to the framework, which is a nice short-term win for those impacted. And that's also going to inform how the EPA implements the VSP. And the following couple areas I wanted to highlight on, they summarize EPA's current thinking on revisions of the framework. The first one is narrowing the areas within the endangered species range map to only include locations that are important to conserving a species. Second is clarifying the scope of the VSP for non-ag use, clarifying potential exemptions to the proposed mitigation and whether additional exemptions are needed, revising some of the proposed mitigation and additional mitigation options specific to non-ag and specialty crops. So seeing how specialty crops were treated in certain ways of row crops, there are some noticeable differences. So those revisions will be welcome and continue to be worked on through the ag groups and the appropriate stakeholders at the EPA and those impacted. Revisiting how the EPA selected the pilot vulnerable species is also going to be assessed and communicated out further. And then last but not least, developing a consistent approach to reduce pesticide exposure to listed species from spray drift and runoff. As I mentioned, there were some differences in the crops and impacted areas. So consistency and being able to customize that to those respective areas is going to be super important. Looking down the road and where we're heading by fall of 2024, the EPA intends to provide additional updates on the VSP. We're going to continue as the Walnut Commission continue to engage on all EPA ESA matters or Endangered Species Act matters, and with the intent of ensuring favorable outcomes for our walnut growers and the ag industry as a whole.
Environmentally adjacent, many listening are aware of what's happening with the Rodenticide Act and some of the mitigation measures that will be reduced. And the same is to come for herbicides and insecticides.
You're really going to want to pay attention to your label, having consistent labeling. Further mitigation measures are going to be identified and how those actually get into place. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that need to be put together, but it's going to be even more important to continue to talk with your PCAs, with your registrants, and stay informed on any notices or updates that will be put out by the ag groups and associations. So there's products that are on the list for further focus, and without getting into each one specifically, there are some products that will impact our producers. So taking advantage of those windows for comments, practical outcomes and advocacy are going to be important to really preserve and protect the tools in the toolbox that are currently available, because further scrutiny, further restrictions, further regulations are coming. So it's important we be out in front of this and be united to really stay ahead and have those items of value available for our farmers.
Tune in on the next Walnut Wednesday episode for more regulatory updates. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation, explains that the Census of Agriculture is conducted every 5 years and provides a comprehensive snapshot of the agricultural landscape. The latest census conducted by the National Agricultural Statistics Service with USDA was released not too long ago for 2022 and shows that the number of farms in the U.S. declined by 141,733, or by 7%.
You have a lot of different pressures impacting producers right now. So regulatory challenges, access to labor, each regionality is viewing farmers differently. And, you know, environmental regulations have increased in certain areas, making it more expensive for especially smaller farmers to comply. Access to labor, especially for specialty crops producers. Weather conditions have pushed out farms in certain areas. We've seen higher percentages of farms lost, particularly in the Southwest. You have low cost foreign competition that then combines with some of your regulatory challenges. That makes it harder for American farmers to compete. And then, as always, your heightened production costs. Production costs have increased and are forecasted to increase to record levels yet again. The USDA net farm income forecast from February forecasts those to increase $16 billion over last year, which is a 4% increase. Things like interest rates continue to pressure farmers.
Munch notes that while these results are not unexpected, economies of scale present an opportunity for farmers to leverage higher volumes. Now armed with this information, it's crucial to convey the farmers' stories. The data underscores that farmers are actively innovating and adapting to modern challenges, according to Munch. Early Tuesday morning, a fully loaded container ship veered off into one of the support structures of the 1.6-mile-long Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. With a transportation disaster comes key questions about the Port of Baltimore's ability to continue operations. The port accounted for a record 52.3 million tons of foreign cargo last year, worth $80 billion. The Port of Baltimore is a key import-export point for farm and construction machinery. The port tallied a record 1.3 million tons of roll-on, roll-off farm and construction machinery in 2023. The previous record was 1 million tons in 2012. Closer by 150 miles than any other mid-Atlantic harbor to Midwest markets, the port is the nation's largest roll-on, roll-off transportation hub for nearly every ag equipment manufacturer in the United States. Customers at the port include CNH Industrial, Caterpillar, John Deere, AGCO, Kloss, and Komatsu. Some customers, such as John Deere, have been doing business with the port for more than 30 years. The USDA has authorized the release of emergency hay and grazing and conservation reserve program acres nationwide to livestock producers affected by the wildfires in Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Texas. Many ranchers in those states impacted by the recent wildfires are in need of grazing acres and hay resources to sustain their herds while they work during the months ahead to restore their operations, according to Kelly Atkins, Texas Farm Bureau Service Agency Director. If you have CRP acres and want to help wildfire-impacted ranches, please contact your local FSA office. They'll determine available emergency and non-emergency use options. Although the primary nesting season has already started in Texas, CRP participants can continue to donate emergency grazing authority to livestock producers in need during this period in counties eligible for the livestock forage program due to drought. FSA also offers non-emergency use provisions for CRP acres as an option during the primary nesting season in Texas. It's a milestone for the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
It is an extraordinarily important day for American agriculture and for our country.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack at a rice packaging facility in Fountain City, Wisconsin, Tuesday, at a celebration for a milestone in the USDA's Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program. Vilsack holding up a plastic bag above his head.
This is the first commercially produced climate smart product. It's long grain rice. It's a 2-pound bag of rice, the first of what I suspect will be hundreds of products that are produced in the country to respond to consumer demand for sustainably produced food, but also provide an opportunity for farmers to get a better shake in the marketplace.
Again, this rice is the first verified Climate Smart commercial food product, but
I can guarantee you it won't be the last.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Environmental Protection Agency agreed with recommendations from its scientific advisory panel on atrazine. The recommendations remove severe poor quality studies that played a role in the agency's recommendation for an ultra-low aquatic level of concern for atrazine. The SAP was held in 2023 at the request of agriculture groups active in the triazine network. The panel considered EPA's white paper and stakeholder comments to exclude or restore several questionable studies used to set the aquatic concentration equivalent level of concern. The panel's scientists appreciated the farmers and agriculture representatives who testified on the real-world benefits and necessities of atrazine, as well as the real-world consequences of EPA's proposed decisions. The USDA intends to again renew its charter of the Fruit and Vegetable Industry Advisory Committee. In a March 26 Federal Register notice, the USDA said it will again renew the committee's two-year charter, which is set to expire on May 23rd. Since it began in 2001, the advisory committee has met up two times per year to develop recommendations for submission to the Agriculture Secretary on issues affecting the U.S. produce industry. The purpose of the committee is to examine a full spectrum of issues faced by the fruit and vegetable industry and provide suggestions and ideas to the Secretary on how USDA can tailor its programs to better meet the fruit and vegetable industry's needs, according to the notice. The minutes of the group's latest meeting on March 4th and 5th are available on the USDA website. According to the agency, up to 25 members shall be represented, and that includes fruit and vegetable growers and or shippers, fruit and vegetable wholesalers and or receivers, brokers, retailers, fruit and vegetable processors and or fresh cut processors, food service suppliers, organic and or non-organic farmers, farmers markets and community-supported agricultural organizations, state agricultural departments, and trade associations. Comments on the agency's intention are invited through May 1st at regulations.gov.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.